The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Before we get to the Reader's Digest, last week we were ending up with an articles about headaches and how to stop them and everything, but there's one section we left off because we ran out of time. When head pain is an emergency, the searing pain of a sudden headache or the weird visuals like bright zigzag lines or shaped in accompanying migraines may make you think, is this a stroke? A brain tumor? Thankfully, even severe headaches are usually not emergencies. But sometimes a headache can be a sign of something more serious, says Mia Menon, MD, a headache expert at NYU Langhorne Health in New York City. Here's how to know a severe, sudden headache should prompt you to call 911 or have someone take you to the ER. You are pregnant or have a serious pre-existing medical condition. In pregnancy, a severe headache can indicate dangerously high blood pressure, and severe headaches with people with cancer, COVID-19, or HIV/AIDS can indicate a worsening of the conditions. You recently experienced a hard bang on the head. Head trauma followed by headache plus nausea or vomiting could signal a concussion or bleeding in the brain. Your headache comes with exercise. Some people suffer tension-type headaches after exercising, but if it includes pain in your chest, jaw, or neck, difficulty breathing, it could mean a heart attack. Your headache is accompanied by a loss of consciousness, convulsions, or shortness of breath. That could be due to having a type of epileptic seizure. You also experience serious vision problems or problems speaking. This could be your first migraine with these kinds of symptoms, or it could be a stroke, especially if you have other symptoms including numbness or weakness on one side of their body or drooping on one side of your face. The headache comes on suddenly along with a stiff neck, a high fever, and confusion. There could be meningitis, the swelling of the membrane around your brain and spinal cord. Severe headache and worsening pain with physical activity, coughing, or straining. It could signal a brain aneurysm, a bulge in the blood vessel in the brain. The worst headache you've ever had comes on suddenly. It could be nothing more than a bad headache, Menon says, but it's a good idea to play it safe and head to the ER so you can rule out anything serious, she says. You don't mention anything in here about having a teenager. That gives you a headache all the time. All right, now let's switch back over to the Reader's Digest. And considering we're talking about headaches, this next article is kind of interesting in the health section. Stress less. Yes, it's possible. Every part of your body will thank you. My jaw hurts. Big deal, right? It starts with a looming deadline or a squabble with my spouse. But tension becomes clenching and then pain. Soon I can't eat crunchy sandwiches, my blood sugar drops, and a headache is inevitable. I might cancel plans to exercise or see a friend, so my mood is going south at record speed. Good night's sleep is impossible. I'll toss and turn instead and clench some more and then start over again tomorrow. Stress is a big deal. Even the littlest seed of stress can quickly snowball to make you sick. Not anxious, irritable, or depressed, though it can certainly do that too. I mean physically ill. And the whole body, from the dead stem cells causing prematurely gray hairs on your head, down to the reduced blood flow in your toes. Seriously, foot tingling is a common before and after a panic attack. If you need a reason to take a walk or a meditation break, here's a reminder of how stress manifests itself in every part of your body. Your brain. I think, therefore I stress. Of course, stress starts out in the brain. Let's start out by defining the term. Stress is a stage of worry caused by an external trigger, says Crystal Lewis, a clinical psychologist at the National Institute of Mental Health. Stress can be short-term and acute, like speeding out the door and get to work on time, or long-term and chronic, like a busy career, full stop. Ideally, your stress is acute and you bounce back immediately. In reality, like three-quarters of Americans who report that stress has daily affected their lives, at least some of your stress is likely chronic. Either way, your brain's amygdala jumps into high alert by having the hypothalamus activate the sympathetic nervous system and release a chemical rush of cortisol, adrenaline, and norepinephrine. Hundreds of thousands of evolutionary years ago, that might have helped you outrun a saber-toothed tiger. It's less helpful in 2024 when you're having the same tiger-sized response to being late for a meeting. Whatever it is, because you're in a situation you can't control or manage, your brain is releasing a flood of hormones to help you deal, says Lewis. Those hormones can destroy neurons, particularly newly formed ones, leading to brain atrophy, shrinkage, or damage to the prefrontal cortex, an area of the brain that is essentially for cognitive function, focus, and memory making. Wow. Your head, jaw, and shoulders. Boy, this is serious stuff. The first place you might actually feel stress settle in to stay is somewhat called the tension triangle. When you're stressed and your body is in active fight or flight mode, your muscles tense up to prepare to protect you, says Lewis. Stay too long in that state, not unlike holding yourself in a plank at the gym, and soon you'll feel muscle fatigue and strain. Unconscious clenching of the jaw can lead to or exacerbate teeth grinding, temporomandibular joint TMI disorder, or an awful-sounding global sensation that makes it difficult and uncomfortable to swallow. Have you ever noticed an unfortunately dimed Friday night headache after a long, hard week? That's because your far too high stress hormones from the week plummet. Blood vessels dilate, a.k.a. vasodilation, long associated with migraines, and you're now firmly in the headache town until you unwind. Your gut. Stress feels stomach churning or gut wrenching because the brain and the gut are so intrinsically linked that scientists have named the mind-gut connection. This refers to millions of nerves and neurons trading in messages along the vagus nerve, a thick cable running from brain to gut. Whatever is happening to you emotionally, the gut knows it and feels it, says Emmerin Meyer, a gastroenterologist and author of The Mind-Gut Connection. The gut is the habitat of microbes, and anything that changes the habitat affects the microbes, which have to adapt. Not only does the activity of the microbiota in the gut change, but so does its community structure. In addition, stress can cause changes in secretions of fluid, transmission time, and intestinal permeability, which is called leakiness, where potential toxic molecules from the undigested food seep through the intestinal lining into the body and bloodstream. The body reacts to misplaced molecules as it does to all foreign invaders, explains Dr. Meyer, via low-grade immune system inflammation. Meanwhile, stress increases acid production while it slows the emptying of the stomach, leading to acid reflux, heartburn, or irritable bowel syndrome, IBS. And any gastric pain you do have will actually hurt more. When you're stressed, all your sensory nerves go up in sensitivity, says Dr. Meyer. Your heart. When it comes to the heart, short-term stress hogs the attention. The very rheumatic sound broken heart syndrome, a.k.a. stress cardiomyopathy, can happen with acute stress, whether emotional, like fear or grief, or physical, like a high fever or seizure. A sudden release of hormones, such as adrenaline, may narrow the small arteries in the heart, temporarily decreasing blood flow to the heart. You might have palpitations, hyperventilate, or even faint if you're not getting enough oxygen, says Patrice Lindsay, a director of Canada's Heart and Stroke Foundation. The effects of short-term stress are immediate and palpable, sure, but there's a reason that chronic stress is dubbed the silent killer. Stress wreaks all kinds of havoc on your heart, says Lindsay. Among them, increased heart rate, arrhythmias, irregular heartbeat, and excessive vasoconstriction, when blood vessels tighten and constrict, which is the cause of tingly toes. The largest effect, however, is this. If you live in a state of stress all the time, it raises your blood pressure, the number one risk for heart disease and stroke. In fact, 1 in 4 adults worldwide has hypertension, which stiffens and damages the arteries, decreases blood flow and oxygen flow, and increases the risk of blood clots. Your lungs. Cursed with constant coughing every winter, a bigger problem than germs and viruses is likely unchecked stress hogging your body's resources. Spiked cortisol dampens your immune system, so it's less powerful in the fight against the bugs that cause cold and flu, says physiologist Laura Genzisi, a fellow at the International Stress Management Association. Among many complex interactions between stress and the immune system is this double whammy. Stress reduces the lymphocytes, your army of white blood cells, often called natural killers, and those you do have must work harder amid any chronic inflammation that's already draining the immune system. Your skin. If you've ever blushed with embarrassment or broken into a sweat during a test, you know the epidermis, your body's biggest organ, reacts to cortisol almost instantly. Short-term stress, like feeling anxious before a presentation, can cause temporary problems like flushing, itching, and sweating, says Elia Ahmed, psychodermatologist who specializes in the interaction of mind and skin. Cortisol also drives sebum, oil, production, which is why you might break out the night before your wedding. All those will pass, thankfully, but so, not so, the long-term effects. Stress drives inflammation, Dr. Ahmed, which aggravates existing conditions like eczema, psoriasis, and rosacea. As cortisol levels increase, collagen levels decrease, causing lines, wrinkles, pigmentation, dull skin, and other signs of premature aging, she says. Plus, stressed-out people sleep less, eat worse, and are often dehydrated, all factors that show up in your face immediately. Your reproductive system. Ever charge through your front door after a long, awful day, feeling eager for romance? Probably never. Imagine holding a fist all day, and then at 8 p.m. unclenching to grab a fork, says Uchina Osai, a physical therapist and sex educator based in Austin, Texas. Your hand won't feel good if the same is true of your body. Chronically high cortisol levels have demonstrable effects on sex hormones. For women, the hypothalamus, which should tell the pituitary gland to produce period-causing estrogen and progesterone, is instead too busy managing cortisol. This can cause irregular or missed cycles, decreased ovulation, and reduced fertility. For men, chronically high stress levels inhibit testosterone production, which can cause lowered sperm count, erectile dysfunction, and impotence. Your muscles and joints. Some backs are common, of course. But sore arms, legs, hands, and feet are all possible places to stash stress. Inflammation brings blood to the area to clear up any damage or debris, says Genesi. When your brain senses pain, whether it's because you've sliced your thumb or you keep clenching your jaw, it works to repair the damage. This can trigger nerve impulses that may lead to physical discomfort. Inflammation causes redness, soreness, swelling, and pain, she says. Chronic inflammation can feel like joint stiffness, tendonitis, or aches and pains. Left untreated, you risk irreversible scarring, fibrosis, DNA damage, and, because it affects the way cells grow and divide, mutations that cause tumors or cancer. That stress can kill is a terrifying thought unless you turn it upside down. You can counteract all of this with some simple tricks to lower the experience of stress, says Genesi. For me, that's yoga, a 10-minute morning meditation, and a monthly massage. For you, it could be something even easier. Study proves that just closing your eyes and breathing deeply can help reduce and regulate your cortisol level, wherever you are, right now, and for free. Nightmare Alley, drama in real life. A couple fleeing the shelling in Ukraine are captured by Russian troops. It's up to their frantic son, living 1,500 miles away, to get them free. When Russian soldiers opened fire on our car, I thought we were dead. It was March 4th, 2022, 8 days into the invasion of Ukraine. My wife and I had hurriedly packed all our valuables that could fit in one suitcase and a couple of carry-ons. We hired a driver, thinking we could make it to the train station in Irpin, a village outside of Kiev that we had fled to after the war began. Nearly as soon as we pulled away from the rural farmhouse where we were staying, we ran into Russian armored vehicles. "Go back! Go back!" my wife screamed. The driver frantically tried to reverse. It was too late. Russian infantrymen began spraying our Toyota Camry with automatic weapons fire and chasing after us. As I ducked behind the driver's seat, I could hear the glass shattering into a million pieces as the bullet struck the windows. Somehow, we managed to jump out of the moving car, hop over a fence, and take cover behind a bright blue porta-potty. Our bullet-ridden Camry careened down an incline and smashed into a fence. It was a complete wreck. "Come out from behind there," yelled a Russian soldier. We stepped out from our hiding place, hands raised, explaining we were unarmed civilians on our way to a train station. The Russian soldier approached and pointed rifles in our faces. The story of our capture started with a miscalculation. "There will not be a war," I heard that phrase over and over in Kiev. My wife, Irina Semenosenko, and I had been living in Ukraine for 21 years. I worked as a military affairs and Russian political analyst and as a consultant to the aerospace industry. Putin threatening Ukraine was a movie we had seen many times, and I assumed the saber-rattling was just that and nothing more. Then the missile strikes began. Around 4 in the morning, the air raid sirens sounded, and we sought shelter in the underground garage across the street from where we lived in Kiev. When the shelling stopped later that day, we returned home. A few hours later, the bombardment began anew. We did not know what to do. Getting in our car and driving west away from the Russians was impossible. The roads were clogged with traffic for miles, and there was not a drop of gas to be had anywhere from Kiev to the Polish border. Anyone left in the city was now trapped there. According to the sense of helplessness was the odor of exploded ordnance permeating the air. This was not just a campaign against Ukraine's armed forces. This was a war to terrorize the civilian population as well. After spending two nights in air raid shelters, we decided to evacuate. We had friends about an hour outside the city, and they kindly agreed to let us stay in their guest house. Within 2 days of arriving, fighting in and around nearby Gostomel Airport had shut down all utilities. The artillery and mortar duels between Ukrainian and Russian forces destroyed the water and power lines. Reaching their house was not so difficult, but now going back to Kiev was impossible. Every bridge between us and the city had been blown up to stall the Russian advance. In our attempt to reach safety, we had become trapped. There was no exit from this place, as the entire area was now ring with Russian troops and armor. During this time, our son Antonio Brasilio Johnson, 18, was at the boarding school in Cambridge, England, monitoring the war 24/7. He spent long nights speaking with people in Ukraine, on some cases helping them find air raid shelters and ways to get out of battle zones. But he had only limited contact with us. No electricity except for about 3 hours a day from a gas generator meant smartphones were almost impossible to recharge. So Wednesday, March 2nd was the last time we were able to talk to Antonio. The next day, I'd expended most of the battery remaining on my MacBook Pro to compose an article on the war. At that one point, I had to stop working, and all of us, Irina and I and our friends and their children, housekeeper and nanny, had to take shelter in their root cellar while several Russian armored vehicles were stopped on the road outside the house. The Russians appeared to be lost in a maze of country roads. They eventually moved on, but it was clearly no longer safe to stay here. So we made a break back to Kiev and fell into the hands of the Russian army. We watched in horror as the Russians looted our car, our belongings, violently ransacked, and everything of value smashed or stolen. Irina had a hard drive full of nothing but family pictures and photos and videos of our son playing piano. It was among the many items stolen, a lifetime of memories gone in an instant. I noticed blood running down Irina's face, flying fragments of glass from the shattered window had lacerated her left cheek, and there were small grains of glass in her eye. Fortunately, a Russian combat medic was on the scene and treated her before the condition could become worse. All of our computers and other hard drives were taken. All the work, every article I had ever written, every document I had ever saved, every photograph I had ever taken were all gone. But the big bonanza for these war criminals was yet to come. As they tore into my computer bag, they found a portfolio where I was keeping the money we had saved for my son's education. "Foreign currency," explained one gleefully. This to them was the best payday they were ever going to see. The soldiers next began rifling through a pile of research materials I was using for some writing I was doing on the history of missile systems. Though none of these documents were classified, these dimwits were convinced they had stumbled across some top-level intelligence operative. The same soldier was so overjoyed at the prospect of stealing all our money that he put a grenade in the pocket of my coat and threatened to pull the pin if I did not tell him what secret agency I was working for. Once they had finished stealing everything we owned, we were sent into a dark basement in a nearby building where numerous civilians were being held. Why these people had been detained was unclear, but I would be shocked if any of them were still alive today. Groups of people who were held in this area ended up in mass graves. Next, we were packed into an unmarked vehicle. Two Ukrainian civilians with their hands tied behind their backs were thrown on top of our legs. We traveled this way for an hour and a half. While in transit, one of the Russians stole a gold ring that I had owned for 25 years. I had planned to give it Antonio once he graduated from college. At some point, we stopped in the middle of the forest, and two Ukrainians thrown on top of us were tossed out into the freezing cold mud. I never saw what happened to them, but I fear the worst. Irina and I were told to stand, not sit in one place, with temperatures dropping precipitously. We were going to be taken into the woods and shot? We stood this way for 2 hours, face to face, keeping our hands warm by holding on to each other. Some soldiers took pity on us and gave us a half full cups of hot tea. Finally, after some questioning about our papers, the soldiers left us in a van overnight with a box of Russian equivalent of sea rations and some water. The driver came in periodically to run the engine for 10 minutes or so to warm up the interior and then shut it down again. We tried to sleep, but without knowing what the next day would bring, sleep was not possible. The next morning, we were driven down the road strewn with burned-out military and civilian vehicles. The back half of rockets protruded out of the ground, unexploded duds, and signs of explosions and devastation were everywhere. It was a journey through the landscape of hell. Then we saw our destination, Kostomol Airport. The runways were cratered and no longer serviceable, and the Russian army was using Kostomol as a command post of sorts. We were blindfolded and taken to an underground bunker, where when the blindfolds were removed, we were in a small room with a wooden desk and three cheap chairs and nothing else. The floor was filthy, the air cold, wet. There was no clock to tell the time and no calendar to know the date. Irina and I began keeping track of the days Alexander Dumas is the Count of Monte Cristo by making six vertical lines and then a seventh horizontal line at the angle on the wall. How long we would be in this place was impossible to determine. No one was told why we were there or under what auspices we were held. No one in the outside world knew where we were or if we were even alive. All we knew is that each morning when the radios and phones in the room across the corridor began ringing, it was the beginning of another day of war. Back in Cambridge, Antonio knew something was wrong. It was now Sunday, and he had not heard from us since Wednesday. He finally managed to get a call through to our friends whose place we had been staying at, and they told him the horrifying news, which they had learned from the driver he had hired. My son went straight to work trying to save us. Even at age 18, he knew how the U.S. government bureaucracy worked. His first call was to the American Embassy in London. Trying not to panic, he explained that he needed to come to the embassy to speak to someone about his parents. Make an appointment, he was told. The next step was to call a friend of ours, retired U.S. Air Force Major General John Schopner, Jr. He is a fighter pilot's fighter pilot who threw 104 combat missions over Vietnam as the commander of Edwards Air Force Base. When Antonio relayed the situation, Schopner's general stars began flashing. He picked up the phone and called the American Embassy in London, and what I was told was an exercise in focusing their attention. His intervention worked. Within minutes, Antonio received a call back from someone farther up the food chain in the London Embassy, who then relayed him to the American Embassy in Moscow. The State Department then put our situation in the hands of some very focused people. In the meantime, Schopner was on the phone to those he knew in the Pentagon, raising an equal level of attention with people there. After these initial interactions, Antonio was in contact with people from almost every government entity in the U.S., United Kingdom, and Ukraine that you could think of. In Kiev, they were beginning to put together a rescue plan that would involve Ukrainian special ops troops storming the airport. But we knew none of this. To say Irina and I were in an information vacuum is being generous. All we knew is that there would be no quick end to this war. We were held in a windowless underground room guarded by a soldier with an AK-47 cradled on his lap all hours of the day. There was no possible escape. Not even a MacGyver could have found a way out. We slept on flimsy, wafer-thin mattresses large enough for only one person, and we only had a single blanket against the clammy cold of early March. My folded-up overcoat served as our pillow. Sanitary conditions were non-existent. I had to urinate into an empty plastic water bottle. Defecating was done into a bucket in the corner of the room that thankfully had a lid to suppress the foul smell. We provided Russian Army sea rations, but did not consume much. Living in this modern-day dungeon caused considerable stress. I suffered from hypertension and could feel that my blood pressure was dangerously high. Our captors did everything they could to hide what was going on in any other sections of the bunker, but we could hear everything. Then the room next to ours was a medical triage unit. The sounds of the maimed and dying still haunt me. Russian soldiers screaming from their wounds, others babbling incoherently, slipping in and out of consciousness as the morphine could only partially kill their pain. Then there was the sound of a big wide roll of packing tape being dispensed and wound around something. We knew what this sound was. Tape was used to bind the ankles of dead soldiers and bind body bags. Every day we were under bombardment. The Ukrainian forces were never far away and put up a shoot-and-scoot harassment attacks against the airport. They made it impossible for the Russians to repair the runways. The building shook from the proximity of the sustained blast. Even in the middle of the night, the artillery mortar duel was not uncommon. We began to worry when the bombardments were accompanied by the sound of small arms fire. Signs the fighting was almost on top of us. 8 days after we were captured, Antonio was contacted by the Ukrainian Emigre Collegrine, I knew in Kiev. She had been a translator and an analyst for high-level U.S. military officials interacting with Ukraine, and she had her own connections in the Pentagon. We still had no idea what any of this was taking place, but there was ultimately several people working on our release. One was Charlie Mount, who runs a catamaran charter cruise service in Florida. He met with one of his friends who phoned someone. He never told Charlie who it was, but when he put the phone down, he said, "Something is in motion. Don't ask me what, but things are happening." 2 days later, two soldiers appeared in our room and told us we were leaving. We were again blindfolded, then brought to the surface for the first time in 10 days. Supposedly, we were going to be taken from the airport to another location. But when we were halfway between the bunker and the truck to transport us, the airport was hit with a mortar attack. Our escort scampered for cover and left us out in the open, blindfolded, exposed to furious shelling. How we managed to avoid being hit, I do not know. But when the firing subsided, our escort shoved us into a truck. We were taken to a nearby village and put into a small building being used by the Russians as a command post. Inside, they stuck us in a shower room with the shower heads removed, almost like in the movies about Nazi death camps during World War II. We were fed a small hot meal, the first one in 2 weeks, and then told we had to sleep sitting up on cold metal chairs. The next morning, March 15, we were driven toward the north. The road was littered with cars shot to pieces. There were burned-out military vehicles, endless signs of explosions, and tracks of heavy vehicles that had chewed up the road. Several hours later, we were dropped in the middle of nowhere. Our driver gave us back our passports and said, "Back the way you came is Ukraine, and that way is Belarus." He pointed towards Belarus. He said, "You should start walking." We could see nothing but empty fields and forest off in the distance. It was 5 p.m. and less than 2 hours from nightfall, so we started walking. We finally reached a Belarus border checkpoint and explained that we were refugees. They let us cross after a series of questions from their immigration, customs, and security personnel. Then came the greatest moment of our lives. A Red Cross workers had a tablet, and we were able to call Antonio on Telegram, an instant messaging app, and tell him we were alive. I was never so happy to hear my son's voice. The next day, we boarded a night train that took us to the Polish border at Brest. Several hours later, we were in Warsaw. First Irina and then I, some days later, flew to the U.S. the following month. Antonio flew from London to join us. We were reunited. "Welcome home, Papa," he said as I hugged him, my body shaking with emotion. "I will always be here waiting for you." We're not supposed to editorialize in this program. I'm supposed to just read from the stuff. But I do want to comment that I had a Marine friend who volunteered at the beginning of the Ukraine war to basically transport refugees from Kiev and that area there over to the Polish border driving trucks. He and two friends spent 3 weeks over there driving people, being bravely avoiding artillery fire and such. I mean, there are people like that that saved a whole lot of lives. We've got to thank them for their bravery. And with that, we trust over to Consumer Reports. And let's read from our president and CEO of Consumer Reports, Mariel Tirado, for the March issue. Consumer Reports is committed to being your trusted source, the place you turn to for rigorous, unbiased testing and candid feedback from other consumers. We want to help you make smart decisions on products and services that best suit your needs and help you extend the life and products you've invested in. That's why the mattress ratings you'll find in this month's cover story reflect not only our extensive lab testing. By the way, the cover story is How to Find a Mattress You'll Love, which includes running the 300-plus-pound wooden roller across each mattress 30,000 times to stimulate years of use, but also honest feedback from CR members who tell us all about the mattresses they've been sleeping on. These Are the Cars Owners Love Most, on page 50, presents a detailed look at the satisfaction level based on data collected from the drivers of more than 330,000 vehicles for our auto reliability ratings, highlights of which you can find online at cr.org/reliability. We survey car owners about everything from squeaky brakes to failed transmissions. When products do need repair, we're here to help you get them up and running again. Check out our article on what to do when your phones, computers, and other tech devices stop working. We have also pushed state and federal lawmakers to pass right-to-repair laws, which require manufacturers to supply consumers and independent repair shops with necessary parts, tools, and manuals to fix what's broken. Too often, those parts are available only at authorized repair dealers, which can be far more expensive, or the manufacturer makes it impossible to repair a device at all, forcing you to buy a new product. Sarah doesn't just help you buy the right stuff. We're also here to help you enjoy it as long as possible. Dangerous toy alert. A Sarah investigation last September exposed the dangers posed by water beads, small gel balls sold as toys for children to squeeze and play with. Water beads expand dramatically when soaked in water. Some are as tiny as a cupcake sprinkle, but can grow to the size of a marble, while others are the size of a small grape and grow as big as a golf ball. The problem is that the beads can find their way in the digestive tracts, ears, noses, and lungs of babies and toddlers, where they contribute to hearing loss, infections, bowel obstructions, blocked airways, and even death. Following CR's investigation, we urge retailers to stop selling water beads and supported federal legislation to ban their sale as toys. We also work with Ashley Hogan, who founded a nonprofit called That Water Bead Lady after a child was seriously injured by water beads, to collect more than 100,000 signatures for petitions calling for a ban on the sale of water beads. We delivered those petitions to the Consumer Product Safety Commission in November. The mounting pressure is working. In December, Amazon, Michaels, Targets, and Walmart told CR they would no longer allow water beads to be sold if they are being marketed for children, and the online marketplace ALIE Express and Etsy said they now prohibit sale of water beads entirely. That's good news, but these dangerous products still pose a danger to children, so CR is continuing to push for a broad mandatory ban on them. You can help by signing our petition at cr.org/banwaterbeads. 7,800, the number of ER visits linked to water beads from 2016 to 2022. Action update. A 2022 CR investigation into a rash of deadly lithium-ion battery fires found that only a tiny fraction of e-bikes, e-scooters, and similar devices comply with a crucial safety standard. That spurred the Consumer Product Safety Commission to threaten non-compliant manufacturers, retailers, and importers with enforcement actions. Now the House Committee on Energy and Commerce has approved, in a unanimous bipartisan vote, a CR-endorsed bill that would lead to a mandatory safety standard. The full House is expected to vote on the measure this year. Safer assisted driving. And there's a picture of a Tesla logo. What's at stake? Numerous federal investigations have found that Tesla's autopilot active driver assistance system had been in use in the lead-up to multiple deadly auto crashes. And what's CR doing about it? For more than 5 years, CR has called on Tesla to do more to prevent drivers from using autopilot when they aren't in control of their vehicle or when they are in situations the system wasn't designed for. In December, the automaker agreed to recall more than 2 million cars equipped with autopilot, issuing an over-the-air software update that will, among other things, make visual driver's alert more prominent and create a 5-strike penalty that disables autopilot for drivers who repeatedly ignore warnings to apply steering or look at the road. But CR's auto safety experts say the new software doesn't do enough to prevent misuse or address the root causes of driver inattention. We're now calling on the company to go further in addressing ongoing safety concerns, including our test track finding that Tesla drivers can easily block in their car driver monitoring cameras. CR also is pushing for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to give more power to force recalls when a company drags its feet. What can you do? You can find recall information for your car using CR's Recall Maker at cr.org/car recalls, and that you can read our latest ratings of many automakers' active driving assistance at cr.org/ADA systems. Ford, Lincoln's Blue Cruise, and General Motors Super Cruise are currently the top rated. Feedback. Our January 2024 cover story, CR's Guide to Better, Safer Drinking Water, offered expert advice on how you test for lead, PFAS, and bacteria, and the best way to clean up your water. Readers shared their thoughts and questions. To add to yours, head to cr.org/waterguide. Thanks for your article about testing and treating household drinking water. This past year, our well water tested positive for E. coli bacteria. It tested positive again after we chlorinated the well. Our water treatment expert added an ultraviolet light to our existing whole house water filter. Our water tested negative for E. coli and other bacteria after this installation. We also decided to test our water for lead as a precaution because our house was built before the regulation of lead pipes. We told if your water has a pH of 6 or higher, it means you have not had lead in your water. The editor's note. Ultraviolet light can be an effective way to kill bacteria. One of our recommended countertop water filters, the Amway eSpring 10-0188, uses that technology. It's also certified to reduce lead and PFAS in drinking water, but it comes with a hefty $1,179 price. Water with a pH level below 7 is more acidic, and then is more likely to leach lead from old pipes. However, having a pH level above 7 doesn't guarantee that your water is free of lead. The only way to know for sure is to test. I did not see any mention of pharmaceuticals in the water supplied in this article. I have read that large amount has been measured in water such as the Great Lakes, and there's concern that this could lead to medical issues over time. Any thoughts? Editor's note. In the January issue, we did include pharmaceuticals as one of the many unregulated categories of concern. They're released in the water supply as a byproduct of jug manufacturing process and via human and animal waste, and aren't filtered out by the wastewater treatment process. While the amount of medication you're exposed to through drinking water is probably very small, some experts worry that long-term exposure to a combination of the many drugs found in our water supply could pose unexpected health risks to humans and aquatic life. Choosing a water filter that's certified to remove all of the contaminants listed in NSF Standard 401 can help reduce your exposure to unwanted pharmaceuticals, pesticides, and other contaminants. Find out one at nsf.org/certified/DWTU and dispose of your leftover medications by taking them to a local pharmacy, not by flushing them down the toilet. Blood pressure testing. Why the best place to check your blood pressure may be at home. You included a table that states that blood pressure of higher than 180 over 120 is a medical emergency. This is not true. The American Heart Association terms a pressure of 180-120 as hypertensive urgency that does not require an emergency room visit. As an ER physician, I see patients on a regular basis who come in solely because their blood pressure is high. After discussion about high blood pressure, I send them to the regular doctor. Very little is accomplished in the ER, and Medicare will pay hundreds of dollars or more for the visit. Editor's note, the American Heart Association says that if you get two consecutive readings of 180 to 120 at home, you should contact your doctor immediately, but you're correct that the AHA advises that these numbers warrant a trip to the ER only if those readings are accompanied by other symptoms, such as chest pains and shortness of breath. We regret that there wasn't room to explain these nuances within the short chart in the article, and thank you for the clarification. Blood pressure measurements could be much more efficient and accurate. Swiss engineers have developed an armband that monitors blood pressure continuously without applying pressure and sends the results to your smartphone. This has been approved in Europe, but the Food and Drug Administration has not approved it, so it can be sold in the U.S. Editor's note, it's true that the more cuffless technologies are being developed, but experts tell CR that these aren't quite ready for prime time. One big problem, many of these devices are based on the same optical sensing technology behind pulse oximetry, which we know now in turns to be less accurate in people with darker skin tones. 15 years ago, my doctor told me my blood pressure of 135 over 80 was perfect. Since then, guidelines for what qualifies as hypertension have been dropping downward. Some say that at the behest of the pharmaceutical companies. If the chart in your article says that the normal BP is less than 120 over 80, does this advice come from a consensus of doctors? Editor's note. No expert groups would suggest someone with a blood pressure of 120 over 8 or slightly higher should take medication to lower it. Our definition of high blood pressure comes from the 2017 guidelines developed by the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology. And these guidelines for defining hypertension have been adopted by groups like the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Still, not all experts agree on the medication should be used to lower blood pressure. For example, guidelines from the American College of Physicians and the American Academy of Family Physicians aim especially at adults age 60 and older recommend that taking blood pressure drugs only while systolic pressure is 150 milligrams HG or above, or 140 milligrams or above for those with a history of a stroke. Choosing your olive oil. I was very excited to read how to choose a good olive oil, but you didn't mention the first cold pressed olive oil, which has, by far, deeper, more robust flavor. Editor's note. Extra virgin oil is by definition first cold pressed, whether the label says so or not. According to standards set by the International Olive Oil Council, extra virgin olive oil can be produced with heat or chemicals. The term cold press is a holdover from the days when the olives were actually pressed to extract the oil. Today, the extraction is done far less in a centrifuge machine. What's the best way to keep pipes from freezing? And prevent frozen pipes this winter, you suggest letting the cold water drip on frigid days and nights to prevent water in the pipes from freezing. What about the hot water pipe? Editor's note. It's a good idea that the hot water drip too, if you have separate hot and cold faucet handles. Leave both dripping slightly. If you have one lever, leave it in the middle to drip on warm. As we mentioned in the article, pipes on an outside wall are more prone to freezing than pipes that are on interior walls. Pets Insurance Solutions. Regarding should you get pet insurance, when researching auto insurance, I found that Progressive Auto Insurance will cover vet bills if your pet is injured in a car accident. This could be a good option for those who travel with their pets. Editor's note, yes, Progressive Auto Insurance policyholders with collision coverage can have up to $100,000 of vet bills covered if their pet is injured in a crash while riding in the insured car. Progressive isn't the only insurer offers coverage. Ask your insurance agent if pet benefits are part of your collision coverage. And we turn the page. And what we're testing in our labs. In our 63 labs, we continue to review and rate products. Here are timely picks for this month. Dishwashers. We tested 94 models. We test for how thoroughly it cleans dishes with baked-on food and dries plastic items. Its energy use, noise level, and cycle time, and more. The scores were a median of 63 with a range of 45 to 81. Scoring at the top level at 81 is the Bosch Benmark SHP9, $1,800. Excellent cleaning results for less than scoring a 73 is the LG LDFC2423V for $500. And fits in narrow spaces is the Whirlpool WDFS5185, 18 inches wide. $960. Dishwasher detergent. We tested 23 products. We test how well a detergent moves backed up food on glass dishes and resists water spots on glassware. The scores of the median score was 75. The range was 47 to 92. Boy, that's a big range. Fights grime and risks water spots and scored a 92 is Member's Mark, Sam's Club, Ultimate Clean Dishwasher Packs. 10 cents per load. Great cleaner, but pricey. Cascade Action Packs with Dawn. 22 cents per load. Scored an 89. And Money Saver was the Great Value Gel at Walmart. 5 cents per load. Scored 74. Do individual dishwasher packs clean better than bottled gels? Our tests have consistently found that the bottled gel detergents don't match the cleaning power of today's top-rated detergent packs, also called packets, tabs, or tabletos. In general, packs do a better job because they contain more additives, including degreasers, bleach, and rinse aids. So they're able to remove baked-on food and resist water spots and glassware. Combine that with the convenience of popping a pre-measured pack into your dishwasher, and it's no surprise that they become the most widely type of dish detergents on the market. But bottled gels are less expensive than the packs, costing as little as 5 cents per load, a bargain compared with the Cascade packs shown above. Carry-on luggage. We tested 9 models. We test for the ease of opening and closing the bag, as well as using its telescopic handle, and impact resistance, the quality of construction, and more. The median was 68, the range was 61 to 80. The best overall at $170 with Samsonite Outline Pro carry-on spinner, and it scored an 80. Nice price was Amazon's basic 21-inch hard side spinner, and that scored a 78, and it's cost $70. Limited lifetime warranty, away the carry-on at $275, it scored a 67. Interior paints. We tested 19 products, how well it hides black paint with just one coat, and resists oil and water-based stains. The median score was 70. The range was 46 to 99. Near perfect, but pricey. Bear Dynasty from Home Depot. Cost $59 a gallon, scored a 99. Good value is the Magnolia Home by Joanna Gaines, premium interior paint. $47 a gallon, scored an 88. And the Zero Vox HGTV Home by Sherman Williams. Ovation Plus at Lowe's cost $42 a gallon. It scored a 70. Mirrorless cameras, 48 models, image quality in regular low light and flash conditions, video quality, image stabilization, quality of the viewfinder, battery life, and ease of use and more. The median score was 83, the range was 71 to 92. Scoring an 85, the best under $1,000 was the Canon EOS R10 with 38-40mm ISSTM, whatever that means. Cost $870, scored an 85. Scoring an 83, but superior video quality, is a Nikon S50 with 16-50mm. Cost $897. For $498, the budget-friendly Panasonic Lumix DMC67K. Electric chainsaws. We tested 60 models. How easy a chainsaw is to start, how fast it cuts through an 18-inch square board, and how safe it is and more. About the scores, the median was 70, the range was 34 to 82. For ease of use and battery-powered at $380 is the EGO CS1804, scored an 82. Safety cutting battery-powered CAT BG630, $280, scored an 82 as well. The bargain buy corded by Oregon 63352 only cost $98, scored a 67. That's a pretty good score. My car's headlights look cloudy. Is this a problem? Ask our experts. Over time, car headlights go from crystal clear to cloudy. The yellow haze you see on headlights as they age happens when the polycarbonate coating on the lenses deteriorates, which could taste more quickly in locales where the cars get a lot of sun, says Jennifer Stockberger, director of operations at CR's Auto Test Center. This is a safety issue because haze limits how much light is projected out onto the road. The good news, you can often remove the haziness by using a headline restoration kit, which can cost as little as $10 for a basic one. New headlight housings cost hundreds of dollars. With this do-it-yourself kit, you sand down the damaged lens coating, then apply a protective sealant. When we last tested a few of these kits, we found that all of them significantly improved output. The kits absolutely work, and you can do the job in your garage or driveway, Stockberger says. You'll see much better at night after using one. If you're not comfortable sanding down the headlights yourself, repair shops provide the service for $100 to $150, depending on the car model and headlight condition. But whether you use a kit or go to a pro, it won't be a long-term fix. The haze will come back in about a year or so, so you'll probably need to restore your headlights annually. What should I do if I find an error on my credit card report? Errors on credit reports are more common than you might think. In 2021, CR analysis, around one-third of participants found a mistake on their report, and it can be serious enough to cause you to be denied credit or pay more for credit. Here's what you can do to remedy an error. First, file a dispute with each of the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. Standardized online forms provided by the credit bureaus can oversimplify your dispute by requiring you to choose among predetermined checkboxes. So we suggest sending any supporting materials, including account statements or payment records you may have, by certified mail. Remember to keep copies for yourself. Credit bureaus have 5 days to get the disputed information to the financial institution or debt collector that supplied it. If the company doesn't investigate and respond to the dispute, the credit bureaus are legally required to delete the information, and you should earn a result from them within 30 days of filing. If that doesn't work, submit a complaint to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau explaining the area and lack of resolution. Include important dates, amounts, and a communication with the credit bureaus and attach supporting documentation. If you lose your case, consider working with an experienced attorney. You can sue credit bureau or financial institution for credit report errors. What's the best way to keep an open bottle of wine for going bad? When you leave a bottle open with leftover wine inside, oxygen in the air converts the alcohol to a different chemical, which is what gives old open wine that vinegary taste. Wedging the original cork back into the bottle can help slow the oxidation of your wine, but according to wine experts, there are more effective ways to keep it tasting fresher longer. One of the best low-cost options that wine experts recommend is to use a disposable bottle stopper called the Repour Wine Saver, $10 for four, which is made with iron and other materials to help soak up the oxygen in the bottle like a sponge. Repour claims it will keep the wine fresh for up to 2 months. Another solution is a vacuum pump stopper, such as the VacuVin Wine Saver pump. This works by pumping out oxygen from inside the bottle while keeping outside air from getting in. The manufacturer claims it keeps wine fresh for up to 10 days. But if a standard cork or wine stopper is all you have handy, cork the bottle and then pop it in the fridge. Keeping it cold will help preserve the wine better than if you leave it out at room temperature. CR's Insights, coffee makers with big benefits. Boy, I could use some of that today. Combination machines that brew both coffee and espresso are not exactly new, but now these multifunction coffee makers are common and have become an even more skills. The Ninja Barista Systems, who have a picture here, can brew a pot of drip coffee from grounds or a single cup from a pod, and has a built-in milk frother, too. With all these bells and whistles, doesn't need to cost a lot. Many of these machines are less than $200 and also perform well in our brew tests. There's the do-it-all brewer, the Ninja Express Coffee Barista System for $200. Boy, that's sophisticated looking. Takes Nespresso-style pods or loose grounds, makes drip espresso, cappuccino, latte, and iced coffees. It also has a fold-away milk frother arm. Wow, scored a 73. Petite but pricey is a specialty pod machine. Nespresso City Z, $330. It takes pods for single-serve Americano, espresso, cappuccino, and latte coffees. Includes a detachable milk frother carafe. Scored is 87. Scoring an 82 is hot or cold coffee from K-Cups, the Keurig K-Cafe Smart at $199. Mix single-serve hot or cold coffees in a variety of sizes, 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10, and 12-ounce cups. It has a built-in milk frother carafe. For budget-friendly, dual brewer is the Brim Triple Brew, which scored a 76. Makes hot coffee two ways. It uses K-Cups for single-serve cups or loose grounds for a 12-trup carafe. Wow, that's fancy. Save more on your groceries. Take a photo of what's in your pantry before you go. It's easy to forget what you already have at home and end up buying items you already have. Save yourself some money by snapping a quick photo of your pantry, spice rack, or fridge contacts before you head out. That way, when you're in the supermarket and think, do we already have paprika? You have the answer on your phone. Head to the frozen produce aisle. When you're looking for out-season fruits and veggies like berries in the winter, you can often find lower prices if you buy frozen instead of fresh. Produce is typically fresh frozen at the height of ripeness, and there is no real nutritional difference between fresh and frozen. Plus, frozen lasts much longer, 10 to 18 months, for optimal flavor and texture quality. Compare store prices before deciding where to shop. An app called Basket Savings shows real-time grocery prices online and in store at your nearby supermarkets, including Aldi, Costco, Kroger, Walmart, and more, allowing you to see ahead of time where the best deals are. Use the app to create your shopping list, and it will show you the prices for items at a variety of stores near you. Swaps nuts for seeds. Nuts can be pricey, but seeds like sunflower and pumpkin can satisfy your craving for a crunchy snack, while supplying many of the same nutrients as nuts at a lower price. At Stop and Shop in New Haven, Connecticut, for instance, a 9.5-ounce tub of store brand almonds costs $6.48 per ounce. The same size container of sunflower seeds was $2.99 or 31 cents an ounce. Time Traveler, good for you drinks. 1936. Alka-Seltzer, a carbonated drink that actually aspirin combined with effervescent salt, CR explains. The aspirin helps with the headaches, while the effervescents help with the nausea. And there's a cartoon that says, Alka-Seltzer, you're a blessing. Fix me up while I was dressing, the two characters say. In 1944, we evaluate teas and tell you readers that green tea has a small amount of vitamin C and caffeine, which gives a sense of well-being. In 1951, CR warns that bromo-seltzer, a popular headache relief drink, contains dangerous ingredients that if consumed regularly could cause addiction and even death. In 1962, fruit drinks were popular but often contained added sugar in our tests. None came close to the level of vitamin C that's in fresh 100% orange juice. In 1976, CR tests 10 chocolate milk drinks, mixes, and how much calcium they contain. A Ghirardelli Coco runs hand down with 300 milligrams of calcium per serving. In 1980, bottled waters are being marketed with words like natural. But CR's test that done that New York City tap water is just as safe and tastes better than water, than bottled. 1992, juicing has become popular, but CR explains that the process removes fibers from produce. Nevertheless, we recommend the Panasonic MJ65PR juicer at Best Buy at $80. 2010, CR advises looking for low-fat smoothies with no added sugar. Our healthiest, best-tasting choices, the Boldhouse Farms and Lifeway bottles. 2017 report that drinking coffee less than 3 cups a day could be good for you, lowering your risk of heart disease and some cancers. In 2024, our latest review of beverages, this fruit juice when they and whey blend is a source of natural probiotics, which are good for your health. Spare Foods Probiotic Sparkling Tonic Blueberry and Ginger for $3.75. And how about we close out with a little bit of light humor? During my surgical residency, I was called out of a sound sleep to the emergency room. I showed up unshaven and unkempt and encountered a medical resident and his student, both neatly attired. The resident told his student, "You can always tell the surgeons by their absolute disregard for appearance." 2 nights later, I was at a banquet when I was called to the ER to suture a laceration. I was stitching away, this time wearing a tuxedo, when I saw the same medical resident. He said to his student, "Sure sends him to criticism, isn't he?" It happened to me. I finally answered an email I've been putting off, and the person responded right away, and now I'm back to square one. And with that, we've run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next week. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so very much for listening.